know. I never introduced anybody that gave a lead before. About my experience with this individual has been about a year and a half ago, I moved to Northeast Philadelphia. And I was trying to reconnect when I got out there. And I went to some meetings. And one person really pissed me off. And because he told me the truth. When everybody else spared my feelings. It's probably the hardest thing in my life I ever had to hear. And he's part of the reason I'm still alive today. Words don't do what I feel for this man justice. And I'm not going to share his story. So with that, I'll give you Tony H. Come together we can.
Hello, family. I'm an addict. My name's Tony. First, I really want to say thanks to the committee for having me here. This is actually the first time I've been a main speaker at a convention. I've done workshops and marathon meetings. I did a marathon meeting once where it was me, the chair, and one person in the room. Actually, that unnerves me a little bit more than when the room is crowded because I have to look at the person who's listening to me. If they're bored, you know, if I'm speaking in a meeting and it's like two, three people, one person, it is terrifying because if they're bored, looking at their watch, you know, clearing their throat, I'm out of my mind. In a room full of people, you know, 30, 40 people, whatever, I can scan, you know, I can scan the crowd. And I don't have to pay any one attention to any one person, you know. This crowd, I can't see anybody's face, so, like, I'm hooked up. I will say this, I tend to jump around a lot. My thought process isn't in a straight line. Okay, it isn't. I jump from here to there. I will tie it all together. I will not bullshit you. All right? My language sometimes is a little flowery. I hope I don't offend anybody, but it just is the way I am. Greg said that I was a person that told him the truth. Sometimes that gets me in trouble, but I will say this, it's not one-sided. I give carte blanche, full carte blanche, to anybody in this fellowship who wants to get in my face and call me on anything. I may get pissed. I may walk away. But I have enough steps in my life today that chances are, if what you say weighs merit, I will be coming back the next day going, thank you. There's actually one person who's not even in the fellowship who I respect so much that they have full carte blanche to get in my face about anything. And that's how I stay clean today, by allowing people to be in my life. And be in my life doesn't simply mean I hang. It doesn't simply mean I know them from my home group. It doesn't simply mean we're on H&I or PI together. It means they're in my life. Total carte blanche. Tony, you're being an asshole today. Tony, that relationship you're in is sick. And there's a reason that I have that, and there's a reason that I give it. I'm sure enough people in this room have been to a Narcotics Anonymous funeral. Watching an addict die from this disease is really hard. Watching an addict die is always hard. Fortunately, I am willing to die with the disease and not from it. Every time I go to a Narcotics Anonymous funeral, somebody that relapsed, every time, somebody is standing at the damn casket going, I knew he was going to use. My question is, why the fuck didn't you tell them? You talked to everybody else about them. You told your friend. You talked about him at the diner. Oh, so-and-so's fucking that one. He's messing with this one. He ain't got no steps or program at all. Why didn't you tell them before they were laying in the casket? I'm going to tell you why. And it didn't come to me day one. It didn't come to me my first few years. Because I didn't want to have somebody hate me. I didn't want somebody to turn around saying, mind your own business. I didn't want someone to say, oh, Tony works my program. Don't take my inventory. Which is phrases we like to use. But you know what? How do we save somebody's life if we won't tell them the truth? How do we get our own lives saved if we won't listen to the truth? And you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I go up to you and I say, dude, you're working three jobs. You're going to school. You're making one meeting every other week. You haven't called your sponsor. That's fucked up and you're on the way out the door. What if I'm wrong? What if their program is just fine? Well, you know what? I didn't do any harm. And what if I don't say something and I'm right? Maybe it's a little smugness. Maybe I don't want to have to be at that casket and think I should have done something. I should have tried. You know, we got a first tradition that talks about unity. And it says that my personal recovery depends on the unity in this fellowship. And that's at all levels. The group, the area, the region, the world, the unity between four addicts sitting in a diner having a cup of coffee. My personal recovery depends on that. And I remember going to a meeting one time outside my area. I just got in the car, took a little cruise to another area. And nobody knew me at this meeting. I had, I don't know, 5, 6 years clean. Nobody knew me. And I walked into this meeting, and nobody said hello to me. Nobody hugged me. Nobody greeted me. Nobody said jack shit to me. Man, I got on a phone. I called my sponsor. Yo, dude, this meeting, this area got no unity at all. None. So I went to this meeting. Nobody even hugged me. He said, who'd you hug? No, you don't get it. I've never been here before. They don't even know if I have a day clean or a year. And nobody even said hello to me. He said, who'd you say hi to? You just don't get it. So nobody even greeted me. What kind of home group is this? He said, did you greet anybody? He said, you go back, you hug everybody you can get your hands on. You say hello to everybody you can get your hands on. He said, you want unity? Participate in it. You want it to affect your personal recovery? Show your personal recovery. Forget all that good, wonderful stuff you share in the meeting so that everybody can hear what great steps you have. Demonstrate it. You know, my disease has always been about one thing. We talk about, I used because I wanted to fit in. I used because I felt bad in my skin. I used for all these psychological reasons, and they're fine. I used for one reason. I have a disease that makes me want to feel good 24/7. That's it. I want to feel good. And if I feel good, I want to feel better. And I will shoot it, snort it, smoke it, eat it, drop it, fuck it, drive it, marry it, steal it, read it, join it, sew it. Whatever comes along, if I meet somebody that looks like it's making them feel good, I am doing it. Until it stops or doesn't work fast enough. Which happens around here a lot. People come in, they come in for a few months, it doesn't make them feel good fast enough, they leave. This isn't a drug, people. If you're new, I'm sorry. This may not work instantaneously. Recovery is not a pill. It's also not sexually transmitted. All right? So try as you may, you can get laid all you want around here. And I won't give you a day clean. And we get five, ten years clean, and sometimes we forget that we only have reprieve from this disease for one day. That's the only reprieve we were ever given. And like I said, I just want to feel good 24/7. I'll do that whole list of things. My path to feel good before and during my active addiction and today sometimes has led me to many places other than drugs. I've been a part of every religion, every cult you can think of. My father was Catholic. My mother was Jewish. I've been to Catholic school. I can speak a little bit of Hebrew. I've been a Protestant, Episcopalian, a Lutheran, a Methodist. I've been involved in Wicca, witchcraft, numerology, astrology, palmistry. I've read Think and Grow Rich, Power of Positive Thinking, Dianetics, Gregorian Chants, Candle Power, the Third Testament of Christ, every Bible I could get my hand on. Anything somebody said, hey, this will make you feel good, this will answer your life, this will make everything in your life wonderful, this will make you rich, this will get you laid, I joined it, I signed up for it, I read it. All them books at 3 o'clock in the morning, they come on, buying real estate, no money down, I'm on the phone with a credit card. This will make me feel good. Of course, I read 2 or 3 chapters, I don't feel good fast enough, I'm not rich, nobody shit money on me instantly, so this doesn't work. And again, it happens around here. Come in, make a few meetings. And you hear people, you ever run into somebody who's not in a fellowship anymore? You run into them somewhere that they're out using or something, they tell you, I tried that anything, it didn't work for me. It'll happen if it hasn't happened to you yet, dying or something. I tried that. Yeah? Why didn't it work for you? Well, I used. Well, I first got here, they said don't pick up on it in any and all circumstance. If you pick up, you didn't try that anything. Did you get a sponsor? Yeah, did you call them once in a while? You didn't try that anything. You know, you got to do A, B, C, and D. If you half-ass this, you'll get half-ass recovery and probably get high. you know, to get the guy, well, you know, I can get a sponsor, and I probably can join a home group, but I really can't call people I don't know. He didn't try the NA thing. Well, you know what? I can call people I don't know, and I can get a sponsor, but I really don't want to do any of that step stuff, you know? You didn't try the NA thing. You tried your own thing. And your own thing works if you want to get high again. You know, growing up through my path of religions, cults, I wasn't trying to find God. I wasn't trying to get help with my drug problem. I just want to feel good. Say it. Often. And for a long time. Life just isn't that way. But even today, when my disease is running my day, I will still do damn near anything to feel good. Maybe I won't put a drug in my body today, but I will still steal it, read it, screw it, marry it, propose to it, work for it, whatever it takes. And I'll stop the minute it doesn't feel good or brings me pain. You know, by the time I got here, a little over 8.5 years ago, I was wanted by the law in 11 counties in 2 states. I'd been shot once, stabbed once. Hadn't had a driver's license in 17 years. I lost it pretty much right after I got it. I mounted up $62,000 in fines in 2 states. And all for stupid shit. You know, I got that first ticket for something stupid, I don't know what it was. And then I didn't pay the fine because I thought, what can they do to me? I was only 17. And then they suspend your license for not paying the fine. So now you drive around without a license, and when you get pulled over, you get a ticket for that. Next thing you know, I got a list of tickets as long as my arm, and I'm ignoring them. They'll go away. And for a while, they stop bugging you for the money. Next thing you know, I'm turning 25. I haven't had a damn driver's license in years. And that's never stopped me from driving, so what was the big deal? So something started happening. More and more jobs, whether it was a driving job or not, wanted you to have a driver's license. Just in case. I couldn't open the doors in my house because I lived in an apartment and I had the window shades always pulled. And if somebody knocked, I had to peek out because the Saturday morning especially, the constables always came to serve the warrants. Because they knew we were hungover and half asleep. And you'd open the door without thinking. And they'd cuff me if they caught me, take me in. Take me to the judge. I'll pay my fines. I swear I'll pay. $5 a week. I'll be here every week. I would beg. Because I got, believe me, I fortunately have never had to spend more than a night in jail. I can't go to jail. I am not a tough guy. They will be trading me nightly for a pack of Newports, okay? I am not a badass. I try to put on a badass attitude, but I am not like that. And I would beg. I'll pay. 20, 30, whatever you want me to do, I'll pay. I would call him, please, you got to bring me down $20, judge is going to put me in jail. The closest person in my life growing up was my father. Fortunately or unfortunately, my father wasn't like a father, he was like a buddy. My mother abused me. I'm a straight, middle class, suburbanite who just moved to the city recently. My family was pretty much dysfunctional. My mother abused me. My father let me do whatever I want to compensate. None of that stuff has any bearing on whether I can get a day clean or not. I have an above average IQ. That has no bearing on whether I can get a day clean or not. Sometimes that really makes it difficult. Because I remember coming in here, and all I kept doing is analyzing these steps. I remember reading all the steps early on and going, all right, step one, I agree. Step two, I agree. Step three, I agree. Step four, don't need that. Step five, don't need that one. I remember my sponsor giving me the suggestion, why don't you stay out of relationships for that first year? Sex count? My sponsor gave me the 3 M's, meeting, meditation, and masturbation. And you know what? They kept me clean for my first 18 months. I don't know about anybody else. My experience is, I know me. I know me. If I'd have gotten a relationship that first year, that would have been my higher power. Because it happens to me still today. Two of the areas of my life I still struggle with practicing my program in is financial areas and areas of the heart, romance. My first relationship in recovery, I told you I jump around a lot. My first relationship in recovery, I sold my soul for. I fell in love with her. I did something that I would get in your face about. I did something that I swore any addict that did it was a scum and he didn't belong to be here. I hooked up with a girl with 2 months clean. And my justification was the fact that I grew up with this girl. I knew her before she got clean. I said, you know what? My sponsor, he told me, like, this sucks. You shouldn't be in this relationship. You're going to kill somebody. He said to me, I told my sponsor, you don't get it, though. I grew up with this girl. She just happened to come in the fellowship recently. If I'd have met her last week, she wouldn't be a newcomer. He said, yeah, she'd be using. Like, there's a justification. You catch them before they come in and you get away with it. Dated her for 2 months and proposed. Funny, I proposed right after sex. That was brought up to me at the end of the relationship. I've never had a relationship last longer than 7 months. I'm 38 years old. I used to blame the women. Today I know, and I don't know what it is yet, because I've never cheated on a girl. I've been described as being a pretty sweet guy. I really treat the women I date with really good. So I really don't know what it is yet, but I do know it's me. Because, you know, pretty much I date the same women over and over again. I just give them new names and faces. And I heard somebody share this in a meeting the other day, so it isn't mine, but boy, did it apply. This woman said, you know what? I have 12-year relationships. Problem is I cram them into 7 months. And it applies to my life. I have these intense relationships for 7 months. And you know what? I've learned that a relationship is a form of high for me. And that every relationship has a fairy tale stage. The beginning of it where you can't get enough of each other and you're bopping all the time and all you want to do is talk to each other and you got to call each other before you go to bed and you want to meet all the time. And you know what? I propose in that period, okay? I don't give it time, the drugs are kind of time to wear off to where it's just a relationship. Because I'm so accustomed to feeling good as quickly as possible. And if I propose to you and you say yes, I get to hold it a little while longer. The last year I ever used, I remember it was, the last year I actually used was 1992, and in August of 1992, my mother had left me long ago. My mother left when I was 11 years old. My father raised me alone. For a period, my father and I smoked pot together. I had to cool dad in the neighborhood. All the kids could cut school at my house. I could have women over anytime I wanted at 16. Hell, my father went to a group called Parents Without Partners, and he would sleep with the mother, and I would sleep with the daughter. In the same house at the same time. I thought that was cool back then. I did. And believe me, my father did the best he could. He loved me. The only way he knew how to show love was to give. I don't fault him for it. Of course, I manipulated the shit out of that little weakness. Anyway, my last year I ever used, 1992, my father was with a new woman, and we all got called to the doctor's office. My father was having some pain. And the test came back that my father had prostate cancer. And that he probably had it for a long time because it was spread through his body. They gave him a year to live. And I remember that because I went on a major binge. And you know, it's hard for me to say I was on a binge. I mean, I got high every day, all day. So what exactly is a binge? Well, for me, a binge was when I spent more and more money on better and better quality and more different kinds of drugs trying to, like, feel better than I was feeling. And I ran into a problem. At that time, one of the worst problems an active addict can have. The worst problem an active addict can have is not having money to get drugs. It's not finding a place to get drugs. It's putting more and more drugs in your body and not being able to get high. I was so numb. God was my world. I loved that man. And he put up with everything. He was always the couch I could crash on. He was always to bail my ass out. He was always to give me his last 20 bucks, let me borrow his car, no matter what I screwed up. That year, I got to watch my dad deteriorate down to about 105 pounds. I got to bathe him and wipe his ass and just watch a very strong, big, burly man shrivel up. My father died exactly within 1 week of that year. And I went a whole year trying to get high so bad. I would go to chemotherapy with him, and I would go out in the car and try. Man, I would do like 3-4 times the amount I would normally do, and I would catch this little tingle of a buzz that wouldn't last. I was heading for an overdose. My father died July of 93. I spent the next 4 months in a binge you wouldn't believe. The last day I ever used drugs was a pretty rough day, and you have to understand something. My life was totally fucked up. Totally. I was wanted by the law in 11 counties in 2 states. I'd been shot. I walked with a limp. I had the horriblest jobs for my age. Bad credit and arrest record, GED. And I did drugs. These were two separate issues in my mind. These weren't related. Of course I do drugs. Look at my friggin' life. If the Pope had my life, he'd be getting high. For crying out loud. You know what? There's a movie. I love this movie, 28 Days. And the guy says something. He says, if anybody knew how uncomfortable it was for me to be clean and sober, they wouldn't dream of asking me to do it. But you know what? For anybody to even insinuate that I might want to stop using drugs in my life was absurd. Let's logic this out, people. Have drugs feel good. No drugs feel shitty. Why would I stop? Because you know what? I couldn't recognize feel good. I spent so much time chasing feel good, changing feel good, worrying about feel good, and consumed by feeling good, that I didn't recognize it anymore. All I recognized was feel numb. I had lost a cigarette pack of Newport, the plastic thing. I would, you know, put whatever drug I was doing, I would wrap it up and stick it inside the cigarette pack. I was living in a very nice apartment in a suburban neighborhood. Very clean, very nice, except my apartment was garbage everywhere. I had a roommate full of trash everywhere, pizza boxes. It was disgusting. We had mice and rats. And, which is really bad because I'm terrified of them things. I actually would sleep on the kitchen table because I was afraid of them. But anyway, I lost this cigarette pack and I was skitzing. I was ripping the house apart, ripping dishes out of the cabinet, pulling, where the fuck my goddamn bed at? And my roommate wasn't there, and I'm ripping his shit apart. There wasn't enough dope in this cigarette pack to get a mouse high. But I was going to find it, because it was all I had. I didn't have any money. Up until that week, I had good credit with the dope man, which is really weird. I couldn't get a credit card, but I always paid the dope guy. I get pounds of shit fronted to me up until that week, because with the shit with my dad in the last month, I finally screwed them over too. So I decided to go out and look for this cigarette pack, and you know, the big giant apartment dumpsters they have. I figured maybe by some stretching imagination, I threw away a bag of trash. I never emptied the trash. Maybe my roommate threw it away. I was just desperate. So I crawled in this dumpster, and there's only big dumpsters you can crawl in. I crawled into this dumpster, broad daylight, middle class white suburban neighborhood. Rose bushes, all that shit. Middle of broad daylight, I'm in this dumpster, and I'm ripping apart trash bags. Hysterical. Ripping apart, yanking cigarette packs, ripping them apart. Going through this trash, I got muck and garbage and shit all over me. Looked like a monster from the tar pits. I just was disgusting. And this little kid comes rolling up on one of them, like a plastic tray, the big wheel thing. He comes rolling up, I don't know, 5, something like that, I don't know. He looks up. I looked down at him. I can't imagine what I looked like to him. He looked up and he said, "Mister, what you doing in the trash can?" Now, I won't say that was the moment when I said, "I have a drug problem." But it was a moment that I recognized I had some kind of problem. Because this was not normal behavior. There's no way this could be normal. And I crawled out of the trash can, and like, moment of sanity, moment of clarity, whatever you want to call it. But I wasn't looking for help. I went back in the house. I went into my roommate's room. We had a lot of guns in the house. We both had permits to carry. Which is amazing, because I got a permit to carry a handgun in Pennsylvania, and I had warrants for myself everywhere. I went and I loaded a Bulldog 44 Magnum with a semi-jacketed hollow point. And I cocked it. And I put it into my head. And I said this little prayer. This is no bullshit either. Not even stretch of imagination at all. I said this little prayer. I said, "God, if you're up there, babies die every day of cancer. Let one of them live and let me pull this friggin' trigger." Now, I did not look at this as suicide, really. Like, in my thinking, it was not suicide. It was euthanasia. I was putting myself out of my misery. Besides, I was useless. I wasn't doing any good for anybody, especially not myself. And I sat there and I prayed, please, please let me pull this damn trigger. Just let me die. Crying out loud, can you answer one friggin' prayer? The phone rang. This guy was on the phone who had gotten a friend of mine, who had gotten clean a couple of months before me. And it's funny because this guy, his name's Kenny, and I don't mind saying his name, he wouldn't mind. He'd gotten a clean a couple months before me, and I tried to talk him out of it. He'd come to me a couple months before, he said, dude, man, dude, I've lived in my car last time, I need to go to a rehab. I'm like, no, man! Dude, you don't need no rehab. Come on inside, we'll get high and talk about this. No, man, something's not right, man. I can't do this anymore. Please, Kenny, don't do that. We've been friends 20 years. It's really weird because I got him high his first time. And he was that kid at the bus stop, and I was the cool kid. Went, yo, dude, it's okay. 20 years later, he's getting clean. And he called me, and he had this part for my car that wasn't running. He had a carburetor or something. I think it was a carburetor. Anyway, I said, bring it over, bring it over. I couldn't put it in. I don't know why I was asking to bring it over. He couldn't put it in either. But I was sitting there with a gun to my head. He said, dude, I can't hang out with you. I said, why not? We've been friends 20 years. You're people, places, and things. The fuck does that mean? Dude, I can't be around people that get high anymore. Well, I won't get high in front of you. He said, that doesn't matter. I can't be around people who use drugs. Whether they use it in front of me or in the next state, I can't be around people that use drugs. First lesson here. Like I said, I like to jump around a lot. Because I know you know, a lot of people come in, we always have that one friend we can hang out with still. They don't get high in front of me, it's okay. They respect my recovery, it's okay. Okay, so you won't get high with them. You'll be thinking about it. People say, well, you know, you're powerless over your thoughts. I don't buy that bullshit. All right? Because you know what? If you hang out in a crack house, you're probably a little more likely to think about using crack. So I do have a little bit of control over my thoughts. If I hang out with recovering people all the time, I'm probably a little more likely to think about recovery. Simple logic. But anyway, I'm begging this guy to come over and drop this carburetor off, wherever the hell it was. Finally, I talked him into it. Well, I'll drop it off and I'm leaving. Okay. Came over, he knocked on the door. Gave me a little reprieve from that gun. He opened the door. Come on, buddy. Come on, come on. Dude, here's your part. I got to go. Where are you going? Wait. Where are you going? He said, dude, I'm going to an NA meeting. I had never, ever heard of Narcotics Anonymous till that minute. I said, what is that? The 12-step fellowship. Okay. What are the steps? I'll do them now. He said, no, dude, it's for people who are recovering from the disease of addiction. I said, can I go with you? He said, why? So my TV's broke. I don't need food in the house. I got no money. I can't put the carburetor in. I don't have anything to do tonight. He said to me, he said, you know what? That's all the wrong reasons. But I can't say no to you. So we got in his car and we drove to a meeting. So that's it. I never heard of Narcotics Anonymous until 10 minutes before my first meeting. We pull up in front of the house. He says to me, you know, I got to tell you, everybody's going to hug you. I said, not the guys. He said, oh, yeah, the guys are going to hug you, too. So I'm going to fuck somebody up. They hug me. I told you, I tried to talk bad. I tried to be bad. I really wasn't. I was a bouncer in bars for years. The only reason I was good at it was I always used to powder the noses of the big guys. I always kept feeding them free blow. So, you know, when I had some trouble, they'd always bail my ass out. I was a real wussy. But I'm talking bad. Oh, any man puts his hand on me, that's it. We're going to roll right there. So we get out of the car. Who's the first hug I get? 6'4", 390-pound black man put his hands around me and dared me not to hug him back. Paws looked like baseball mitts, okay? Put his arms around me, gave me this hug, just sucked the wind right out of me. Welcome, brother. He went, yeah, okay. Today I look back on that and I think deep down inside I wanted a hug more than you can say. From anybody. He hugged me and he put me down. By that time I was so stunned by that time I couldn't believe it. Because like, and my buddy looked at me like, yeah, you know, kick his ass? Go ahead. Yeah, go for it. Dude was big, man. It was so big. Nobody that big had ever hugged me. Well, there was this blonde once, but I mean, this guy was really big, and I was scared. So we went into the meeting, and I have to tell you, the meeting started, there was a speaker, I don't remember what the hell he said. I got me a cup of coffee, and they actually had cake there for something, a cupcake or something. I shoved some of them in my mouth. My first words, I raised my hand as soon as the speaker was done. Anybody like to share? My hand went up. I had no idea what I was going to do. I said, hi, I'm Tony, and you're all full of shit. Honest story, first words I ever spoke in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I said, you're all full of shit. I said, number one, I don't really believe that half of you are truly, totally clean. You're hitting a little duber now and then. You're having a beer once in a while. So don't feed me that shit. I said, the other half of you that are the most bored and miserable motherfuckers I ever want to meet. I don't want to be like you. He said, as far as I'm concerned, yes, my life sucks. Not using drugs is only going to make it worse. How the hell can I bear this life without getting high? It's the only enjoyment I have anymore. I said, first of all, I can't imagine ever having fun again. That was a big concern. How was I ever going to have fun ever again? If you gave me, and I told the people, I said, if you people gave me 10 tickets to Six Flags Great Adventure, close the park to the public and said, Tony, these are for you and 9 friends, ride every ride 1,000 times, my first words would have been, well, somebody hold me? Because I didn't know how to live and enjoy life as other people do. I needed something different. I did nothing without a drug in my body. So I shared this. And people said, keep coming back. And I hated you for it. As far as I was concerned, you were passing a basket. You was talking about God. You was reading from the same book. You was Jesus freaks. Now, I don't want to put down anybody's religion, because like I said, I've been involved in all of them. Religion's a wonderful thing. But it wasn't treating the disease that I had. And all I wanted was to feel good as quickly as possible from it. I got involved with the Satanic Church for a period. And I don't mean a bunch of kids dressed in black going, we love Ozzy, we love Ozzy. I'm talking a real Satanic covenant. Doctors, lawyers, police officers, where to be a part of it, you need to commit an abomination to God. And there's only certain things that fall into that list, and I'm not going to go into what I did. But trust me, and the only reason I joined was not so much that I wanted to love Satan, but I met some girl, she was cute, she was smiling, she was having fun, I wanted to be happy. So by the time I got to this meeting, that's my own life. Please make me feel good. And there was no way you idiots were going to convince me that I was going to feel good ever if I stopped using drugs. After the meeting, we went to this diner. I didn't want to go, but the guy that drove me was going, and I either walked home or went. I want to hang out with you fruitcakes. We got in the diner, and we were in the back of this little crappy truck stop, shit-in-the-wall diner. I mean, it was a dump. It was like you could wring out the cheesesteaks, and it was just nasty. And we sat in the back and took up like 5 booths. And they like sat all around me. Like I tried to sit on a stool, and they grabbed me and put me in a booth with like people all around me. And guys pulled out their guitars. Like guys brought guitars into this diner and started playing. Now me and my buddy who brought me, we've been jamming together for years. Like I didn't play at that time, but I wrote a lot of music. And we wrote, like we had like 2 or 3 tapes we had made of blues that we were pretty decent at. So they pulled out their guitars and they started singing. All kinds of old stuff, old CCR, Grand Funk, Led Zeppelin, you know, Leonard Skinner, just playing, and the waitresses were hanging around, they were singing, and I'm singing, and we're having a ball. Next thing I know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and that same large black man that had hugged me the first time I walked in there, he leans over to me, and he whispers in my ear, having fun? Here I am, a couple hours after my very first meeting. I'm in a diner, I look up at the clock, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. First time in my entire life that I remember going that many hours without putting a drug in my body and having fun simultaneously. Simultaneously. I didn't believe that. I wasn't like a convert or anything. I wasn't, oh, praise it, hey, I can't believe this shit. I was still kicking and scratching. All right, I had a couple hours. I got news for you. There's people in this meeting right now, I'll bet on it, that would kill for a couple hours. I came around and started making these meetings. In the beginning, I picked certain meetings because they had cute girls at them. Not that they would talk to me. One of the things I struggled with most in my first 5 years clean, I mean struggled with, I would be in meetings crying that I knew that I was an ugly guy. I knew that I was unattractive and that I was trying to learn to accept it. And it wasn't that I was fishing for compliments. You couldn't convince me of anything else. So for me to talk to women was outrageous. If I had a date, she asked me.
So I started going to these meetings because there were cute girls at some of them. The only person I would call for a ride is the guy that took me. And he finally said to me, look, you need to reach out to other people. I can't be your only support. He only had a couple months. So early on, I got a sponsor.
I only got one because everybody else said to get one.
I picked this particular guy because he had hair down to his ass. He had this big ass earring. He had a Grateful Dead t-shirt on. The first thing I ever said to my sponsor in a meeting, the first meeting he was at, I walked up to him. I said, yo, dude, you holding anything? He's like, why are you here? Is something to do?
I asked him to sponsor me.
My sponsor told me, you call me every day for the first 2 months. Every day. He wasn't working at the time. I was working 11 nights till 7 in the morning at Denny's. So I would call him the minute I got home at 7 a.m. He loved that.
7 a.m. every day, I woke his ass up. And I'm very verbose. People that have met me here in the last couple of days have already told me, man, I talk way too much. And I do. I'm going to ruin the loudest voice. And I go on and on.
I called this guy every morning at 7 a.m. when I came in. I would talk and talk and talk for hours. And it got to the point where his mother would pick up the phone and go, Tony, Chris has been sleeping for 40 minutes. He would fall asleep while I was on the phone, and I just kept going. And then his mother would talk to me. I would talk to her for another 20 minutes. By the time I had a cup maybe a month clean, I started to realize that I was meeting people whose lives were as screwed up as mine was. It says in our literature, after coming to the Fellowship of NA, we realized we were sick people. Well, it was after coming here that I realized it. I was a sick person, which was a wonderful thing to find out. I wasn't a fuck-up. I wasn't a derelict, an asshole, stupid. I wasn't a moron, a lazy ass. I wasn't a slow learner. I wasn't dyslexic. I had a disease. The disease is just like diabetes, and I always likened it to diabetes. I love simple similes. Diabetes is a disease. If you have it, you have to have a treatment for it. Insulin. You may go a day without your treatment. You may go 2 days without your treatment. You may go 3 days without your treatment. But there is a fact of life, people. If you have diabetes and go too long without your treatment, you can pretend you don't have diabetes and go as long as you want, you will die. You will go into diabetic seizure shock and die. This is the same disease. And you know what? When I go a day without my treatment, I tell myself I can do too. Fortunately that I have some steps in my life and I have people that I give carte blanche to that see the shit I'm going through. I started working steps. You know what, I'm not going to go through each step individually here because I truly believe that, you know, you're sitting with a couple days clean, a couple months clean, and you're hearing about 11, 12 steps, you're like, whoa, I'm not there yet. You know, we give newcomers the... I hear it said to newcomers a lot, you only have to change one thing, everything. I hate that. I hate that. I would never say that to a newcomer. There's a reason. To somebody with a couple days clean, I think that seems like an insurmountable task. Seems damn near impossible. I tell people that I sponsor, you work steps, you make meetings, you serve, you raise your hand, you share honestly, you take my suggestions, and you will change as a result of these things. You don't have to come in here day one and try to change everything in your life. Also, I want to say, these steps, it tells in our literature over and over again, the freedom is in the steps. That's where the freedom is. I come in here, and they talk about admitting that we're powerless over this disease. What does that mean? If I'm hanging out in bars drinking ginger ale, I am not powerless over this disease. I can handle it. If I'm hanging out with the people in my life that are still using, I do not believe I'm powerless over this disease. I'm cool. I'm okay. Powerless to me, and another easy simile for me, and I use this all my sponsees, is I turn on the flame in the kitchen and I hold my hand in it. Really dumb thing to do. My hand gets burnt. I won't hold my hand in that flame because I'm powerless over that flame. There is no way in the world that I can hold my bare hand in that flame without getting hurt. None. I am completely powerless over that thing. Simple as that. I am totally powerless over this disease. There's nowhere that I can beat it on my own. Nowhere. This disease affects everywhere in my life. Everywhere. Spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally. And even years clean, it'll bust our asses. It'll break us down to tears. And I have done pretty much everything you can do to screw up your recovery. But you know what? Everything that you're supposed to do to get recovery, I've done that too. And I truly believe that if you work these steps, that when you do screw up, and you will, that you can get through it clean. I truly believe that if you work these steps, you can get through anything clean. And that's really what we're here to learn. It's easy for me to tell you, I've got it ate clean, and I've got this one time clean, and I'm doing this, and life's so great, when I've got the car, and the job, and the girl, and the money in the bank, and the jewelry. Let somebody close to me die. Let somebody I love leave me. Get through that clean. Then you get to see where your program is. And you know what? I just recently changed sponsors after 8.5 years. It wasn't a bad thing. I love my sponsor. I'm grateful to him for helping me. But he moved farther away than I could deal with, and I need a sponsor I can see on a daily basis. And the new guy I got is amazing. Amazing guy. And he really helps me, and he calls me on my shit. And like I said, I give carte blanche to anybody in here. But I work these steps, and I say that I find out whether these steps are working in my life when the shit hits the fan. Now, I'm going to share with you people what my last 90 days was like right now, the last 90 days I just had. I've had the roughest summer I've ever had. In the last 90 days, my company closed, and I lost my job. My 26-year-old brother overdosed and died. My cat ran away. The car that I busted my ass to buy has been hit 3 times, and it hasn't been covered by insurance on any of them. And my girlfriend broke up with me in 90 days. And you know what? It was the first relationship I ever had that wasn't sick. She wasn't in recovery. She didn't need to be. First woman I'd ever been, I think, I had this amazing amount of respect for her. I still do. I love her. Which is hard for me to say because, like, when I say I'm in love with a woman, it's my definition of love. I've never been sure what that is. You know, I feel good when I'm with somebody. I think I love them. But I do respect her, and she's still a part of my life. She's a friend, and that's real hard to do. I'm really struggling with being just a friend sometimes. I don't want to give that up, though, because she's in my face, and she understands my recovery. You know what? If you won't call me on my shit, I don't have time for you. I don't. You know what? I don't pat people on the back and go, you know, you're in a meeting and you're talking about, I'm 5 years clean, I'm still stealing from my employer, I'm 5 years clean, I'm sleeping around with 3 women on my wife. I'm not going to pat you on the back and go, it's okay, as long as you don't use. But I'm not going to judge you for it either. You can do both at the same time. You can go up to somebody and say, you know what? That's fucked up and you're on your way out the door. Without being judgmental. Because you can have the awareness that you've done shit too. 5 years clean, I stole Girl Scout cookies. Same reaction I got when I shared it. Came out of my office, I'm in an office. In a 6-story building, I got my own office. I'm like amazed. I'm like, God, they only knew me. I come down one night, and the Girl Scout got his little tray of cookies out, you know, the boxes out. I'm going to get my favorites, you know. And I grab 2 boxes, I go to pay for them, and she's blabbing over here with her mother and some den mother, whatever they call them. And I'm like, and I'm waving the money, and they're just yabbing. I said, screw it. The great I am is waiting long enough. And I walked out with a cookie. I went to a meeting that night, I shared about it. People laughed. At that moment, I had an awakening. How absurd. I made a damn good living, and I'm stealing Girl Scout cookies for 5 years clean. So I went back the next day, and I admitted to him. I bought 5 more boxes because I had to make amends. Amend means to change, to fix. You know, like I said, I'm not going to go through all the steps, but I also want to say this for the people that are newer. The steps are in order for a reason. We don't need to jump to like the eighth and ninth step and start making amends to everybody in our life with a couple days clean. We will do some damage if we stay clean through it. I started working these steps, like I said, the freedom's there. And it was hard for me when I got to that second and third step because it talks about higher power. It talks about God. And I don't want any parts of that because I've been through the religions and the cults. I met a guy whose higher power told me it was nature. It wasn't a conceptual thing. He didn't have to come up with some kind of concept of a higher power. He could see it, touch it, smell it, feel it, be with it anytime he wanted. It was real. And, you know, watch the Weather Channel. Weather's a higher, the nature is a higher power. It is stronger and greater than me. Now, I necessarily didn't want that particular higher power, but what it showed me was one of the inalienable rights we're given in here. One of the things that separates from us a cult and a religion. I get a choice of my higher power, a God of my understanding, and nobody can take that away from me. And it doesn't have to come from religion. It says in our literature that our concept of a higher power doesn't have to come from dogma, scripture, belief, religion. It doesn't have to come from that. I don't know if I subscribe to like the doorknob theory. People say, well, you know, a doorknob can be your higher power. Only if I nail it to the floor and sit on it. Because that ain't going to work for me. I also believe that I need to start my day every day. The first thing I have to do is remember that I am a recovering addict. Because you know something? You go to work. You get up, you shit, shower, shave, shampoo, right out the door. When I do that, I'm a gambling man, so I play the odds. When I do that, I have a better than average chance of having an unbalanced day. I have a better than average chance of having an unmanageable day. I have a better than average chance of screwing it up royally. But when I start my day, and I don't need to drop to my knees and say a 20-minute prayer, if you want to, great. But when I get out of my bed before I take a piss, stop for 1 second to remember I can leave that day and go to my job with a better than average chance that I'll have some guidance that day, that I'll have some acceptance that day, that whatever comes my way, I'll get through it. And for me, I got news for you. Today, getting through things clean isn't enough anymore. I'm a little greedy. I want things to improve. I want to not end up in the same pain over and over again. I want to be able to say I walk around something instead of through it all the time. Through it's great. That's growth. You know? But every time I can bang my head one last time, that's cool too. You know, I went looking for this new sponsor and it was hard because everybody was screwed up. Everybody had something totally different. The guy I talked to. Well, you know, he's okay, but he does this really fucked up. He does that. He don't have a good program. I don't care what anybody says. I'm not going to have him as a sponsor. Everybody I talk to, something screwed up about him. And you know what? I would meet guys with 8-9 years clean that hadn't even done like a fifth step yet. Now, I'm sorry. You could stand there and tell me, well, you know, recovery's not a race. But you know, it ain't no damn parking lot either. And if the freedom's in the steps, how can you get freedom if you stay on one forever? And I'm sorry, but sponsors? You know, it's not our... I truly believe that it's my job as a sponsee to go to my sponsor and say, hey, I need to go on the next step. I want to work on this. Sponsors aren't perfect. They get their shit together, you know, messed up sometimes too. But I found this new sponsor, and he's a pretty amazing guy. He's pushing 50, and he hitchhiked to the World Fair, or the World Convention. World Fair. He got out in 95 with a sign that says, NA World Convention or bust. He's like pushing 50, you know? He owns a car, he owns a Harley, he's got a house. He figured he'd get out in 95, and from Philadelphia, 95 is a major access to go down south. Sure enough, people picked him up. And I heard from some people here that they went to the World Convention and heard about this guy that hitchhiked there. You know, I hitchhiked everywhere when I was a kid. I mean, I hitchhiked all over the damn place, but like, you know, it's funny, my first 9 months to meeting, after my buddy stopped giving me lifts, I hitchhiked to meetings.
I hit back the beatings for 9 months. Now, I would love to tell you it's because I wanted my recovery. I wanted that recovery. But that'd be a crock of shit, even though I played that card for quite a while. The truth is, I had too much pride to pick up the phone and call somebody up for a ride. Another thing that will bury your ass, pride. Terminally cool, fatally hit crowd, man. Die with them. My pride, man. My pride will keep me from asking for help. My pride will keep me from receiving it. My pride keeps me from being open-minded enough that when you're calling me on my shit, you may be right. And it always goes back to that carte blanche thing. I'm not that stubborn, like I will listen to you. And I may not agree with you today. I may not agree with you at all. But I have to listen to you. You know what? My sponsor's telling me a story, and I'm sure you've heard this before. He said, you know, if one person calls you a duck, you can ignore it. If two people call you a duck, you can ignore it. If three people call you a duck, start quacking. You know, so I got people coming up to me going like, dude, you need to cut this shit out, or you need to get to work over here. I got people telling me this. I can't ignore it anymore. I spent 20 years, we all spent years doing what came natural to us. And you know what? If some days it's still hard, if some days the desire to use that drug is still hard, that's normal. To use drugs for us is the most normal thing in the world. To not be clean is abnormal for an addict. That's why it's difficult sometimes. But you know what? I think one of the single greatest gifts we get around here is the desire to use gets lifted. Gets lifted. Because why else would we stop doing something that we have every fiber in our being, every molecule in our body says do every day? Why stop something if you want to keep doing it? I wouldn't. I put it down one day at a time in the beginning. But to stop for good? And you know what? I never use the word quit. I rarely use it. I hate the word. I tell you right now, I have not quit using drugs. I stopped for a day. Because you know what? It tells us in our basic text that most of us can do for one day what we couldn't do forever. Forever sucks. I can't think of anything I want to commit to forever. No, I can think of things I'd want to, but I can't think of anything I'm capable of committing to forever. So I commit to not picking up that drug for one day. And you know what? It sounds like a cliche. Just for today. Don't pick up. One day at a time. You know what? That shit kept me clean early on. Because the idea of staying clean forever, the idea of quitting, sucks. The idea of quitting, man, why would I quit? All right. I won't use today. One day. Don't ask me for any more. Just for today means that, like, I don't have to worry about tomorrow or yesterday. And tomorrow's not even here yet. I can compartmentalize my entire existence into one day. And you know what? If that's too hard, I can stick it in an hour. I can stick it in a minute. And it works. This isn't cliche. It's not a crock of shit. One day at a time, you can get up every day and make that one decision to do it again. But you don't have to make it till tomorrow. And you know what? That's a good thing because today's recovery won't give you tomorrow. The first funeral I ever went to, I had a year clean. This guy with a little over 10 years, 11 years, something like that, hung himself. Actually, first he went out. He was Mr. N.A. 12 commitments, 23 sponsees, knew everything about everything, could tell everybody what they were doing wrong and didn't stop doing it. Hated by people. People were annoyed with this guy. And one day he went out. Ended up in a gas station with a spike in his arm. And to come back to a meeting a couple of days later and say, one day clean, was humiliating to him. We were proud that he came back into the room after having that much time. But it was humiliating to him that he hung himself. I'd never comprehended why somebody with that... I thought people with that much time didn't use anymore. But you know what? We get some time clean. We get the car. We get the career. We get the woman, the man. And we forget where the hell we got it. And you know what? I've had periods of that. Periods. And it all goes back to the step work that I've done. And the people in my life that I give carte blanche to. Because I don't want to be coddled. Because, man, I will manipulate the shit out of that. How
We use the word miracle, and it's a damn cliche sometimes. But it is a miracle. It really is a miracle. I'm telling you, like, 9 days. Man, a woman that I'm crazy about, a brother that I tried to help, and you know what hurt worse? I got him high his first time. I know I didn't kill him. I know he chose to use. I did what I was supposed to do. I made amends by availing myself to him, making him aware his fellowship was here. When he wanted to go to a meeting, I took him. But that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. Stand there on a funeral holler. Look at my 26-year-old brother. They found him in a day's inn with a needle in his arm, dead. And you know what? The girl that was with him that supposedly loved him panicked and left him there. I regret the fact that my father never saw me get clean. And I don't have a particularly religious belief that says, well, he's watching me. Because people always come up and say, he knows. I don't know that. And that's just my life. It's nice to be able to hold on to that thought, but it doesn't work for me. You know, it's just, I can't have that particular religious belief that, like, there's my dad's up there watching me. He got to be screwed over. He got to be stolen from. He got to bail me out. He got to watch me fail school. He got to watch me hurt myself and other people, but he never got to see the gifts. But I still believe that I make amends to him by living the best I can. I miss him. I really do. I miss my father. I know that he'll be proud of me today. And you know what? I screw things up all the time. Man, I've done shit that I am not proud of. I mean, bad things in recovery. You know what? I am one of the people that goes to meetings and shares everything. My entire 4-step is on the floor of Narcotics Anonymous. Some people say, oh, if you don't want to leave the room, don't share it. Fine, that works. It don't work for me. I share everything. Stole girl side cookies that night. You know? Stealing shit. I've done that recovery. Blew the rent money in Atlantic City that night. And that's with years clean. With years clean, I picked up a girl hitchhiking who was 16 and let her talk me into buying her beer. And I wasn't looking for sparkling conversation. My head said, well, you know, if you get laid, it's okay. You know? She sat in my apartment, drank her beer, passed out on the couch, left the next morning. I didn't even get laid and I risked my recovery. Risked my recovery. But years clean. In a meeting that night, saying it out loud. Because if I get away with keeping a secret, I'm going to get high. We're sick as our secrets, people. And I'm sick as anybody else here. I have sponsees that use, there's a phrase I hear sponsees use, and sometimes newcomers, it ticks me off. It's like, ugh. A sponsee says to me the other day, he comes up with this thing, you know what, I think I'm only going to go to meetings on weekends now. I got this new girlfriend, I'm working. I said, oh, you only got meetings on weekends? I said, I don't think so. And like, I'm not a sponsor, like, I don't like pat you on the back and go, oh, it's okay, I love you, you know. I'm not really big on suggestions either. You can call them suggestions, but you know what? The word must is used about 60 times in a basic test. I'm only going to go on weekends. I said, no, I don't think so. I said, if you're not really interested in taking suggestions from your sponsor, maybe you need somebody you can blow off. He says, well, you know, I love this. I need to do what works for me. But you know what? Why don't you try this? Why don't you fucking do what worked for me? I got 8.5 years clean. I've been through the steps twice. I've got a life that I'm proud of today. This program is about doing what works for the people who have what you want. You keep doing what works for you, you'll be getting high. And I've done some screwed up shit too. I moved into my house about a year ago in Philadelphia, and at that time I had this job making all kinds of money. I had the new house. I had this great girlfriend. Oh, she was just awesome. And I shut down. First time in my entire recovery, I stopped going to meetings for about 6 weeks. Stopped. Didn't get a new home group in my new area. Didn't plug in. I hate these friggin' meetings. This man, it sucks. I'm in this damn area. No unity, nobody. I don't like any of them. But I was happy. I had a girlfriend. I had a job. I had money in the bank. What more did I need? I was happy. By the time I got 6 weeks with that, and you know what? My girlfriend never knew I wasn't going to meetings. She knew about my recovery, and she would say, "Oh, you going to a meeting tonight?" "Yeah, I'm going to a meeting." I just wanted to be with her. And I didn't want to go to the meetings. I hated the meetings in that area. So anyway, one night I decided I looked up this meeting that was in Philadelphia, but off the beaten path. And I knew nobody would know me there. So I drove up to this meeting, and I got in the room, and I raised my hand. And I figured I'd get honest, because nobody knew me. And I said, "Hi, I'm an addict named Tony. I have 8.5 years clean, but I haven't been to a meeting in 6 weeks." And the whole room said, "Welcome back." I don't know how it is up in this area, but in Philadelphia, they only say welcome back when you've used. Okay? Chill went up my spine. I was like, "Whoa." I said, no, I didn't use. I just haven't been to a meeting in 6 weeks. The whole room again, "Welcome back." Right up my spine, man. After the meeting, the chairperson walked up to me and handed me a white key tag. He said, "Here, next time it'll be for real." God spoke to my heart that day, and I said, "This is my new home group." Because they weren't worried about offending me. They weren't worried about me saying, "Take your own inventory, get out of my face, mind your own business, fuck off." They were worried about saving my life. And if it goes back to that tradition, if my personal recovery depends on NA Unity, and I don't participate in the Unity, then my personal recovery has to suffer. Simple physics. Simple logic. You don't pick up, you can't get high. So here I am, 8.5 years later. New sponsor. Being friends with my ex. Can't find a job, I'm having a hard time. And I'll tell you something about the job I just left. They were doing all kinds of illegal stuff. I was a funding manager for a car dealer. I didn't sell them, but they were doing all kinds of fraud and shit. And I would like to tell you that I left because of spiritual reasons. I was aware of everything going on there. And I had to get out of there. I had to. And I said a prayer to God. I said, "God, like, you know what? If I need to be out of this job, you're going to have to remove me because, like, I'm making too much money. I'm feeling good too quickly." 2 days later, I went to work and all the cars were gone. And they were locking the door and it was closed. They were on Channel 10 News for the rest of the week. Again, I risked my recovery and compromised my principles to feel good. And on the days my disease runs the show, I will do anything to feel good. Feeling good isn't a bad thing. It isn't a bad thing. Everybody wants to feel good. But when my disease is running the show, I will destroy everybody, everything, and everything in my life to get that feel good. It's the first time I've ever been a meeting speaker, like I said, and I've been real nervous. I've met some really great people here. And if you get some contact with me over this weekend, I can be quite weird. I know that. You know what? And I tease people and I cut people. But trust me, if I do it, probably because I like you. It might be a screwed up way to show it, but like, I don't mean any harm. I really don't. I'm so grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to have the people in my life that I do today. Man, I can't. My unemployment runs out in like 2 weeks and I don't know what I'm going to do. You know what? But I'm not in a panic. I may have to backstep a little bit and tree level again. Come on, I had my own office. An addict. I couldn't believe it. 10th grade education, GED, bad credit and arrest record. My finances, I'm terrible, man. 8.5 years clean, I've screwed my credit up 3 times. I get this attitude like, you know what? Why should I pay for the credit card? It doesn't work anymore. I can't feel good from it. Why do I got to pay for it? But like I said, if you get to know me this weekend, wonderful. I don't mean it if I'm joking with you, because, man, I don't want to hurt anybody. I like to flirt. I like to joke around. You know? Today I can do that. And I lived in a hole for 20 years. Self-induced hole. But I am so grateful to have what I have today. And again, I want to thank this committee for just allowing me to come here. I mean, I was so nervous, and I was terrified that nobody would show up. I really was. I was absolutely terrified. I figured everybody went to a meeting an hour ago. They wouldn't want to come hear me speak. And that's just my head. I know that. But the freedom again, there is no freedom without step work. There isn't. And you know what? This process is a great process, but it works in reverse. It does, and it works faster in reverse. Stop doing the things you need to do, and the desire to come back fast. And before I go, there's one last thing I want to touch on. Using drugs is not a relapse. I believe that my soul heartedly. Using drugs is simply the last thing on the list that happens after everything else happens in a relapse. A relapse is a process. When you finally pick up the drug, that was all that was left. There is a page of shit that is a relapse. You check off one at a time until you are in a corner that you cannot get out of clean. And you know what? How fast you check them things off is on how hard you work your program. We all fall into periods where we backslide. And you know what? There is no stagnant. There is no sitting still on recovery. You're working towards your next day clean, or you're working towards your next high. And that's just the way it is. That's just a fact of life around here. And miracle is not a damn cliche. Got a shitload of them here. So remember, like, you have people in your life that are in relapse, do not pat them on the back and say it'll be okay. If you know they're in relapse, tell them so. Tell them why. Tell them where. And if you're wrong, oh well. You may lose a friend. You may save one. And you know what? I have lost friends. I've gotten people's faces. You know what? She's using and you're still sleeping with her. You know what? You're working in a bar. You know, you're going to go out again. And I've had people say, you know what? I'm sick of your opinion. You know what? I have opinions based on experience. I'm not God. And if anybody here disagrees with me today, didn't like what I shared, I'm not NA either. Go to another meeting, please. If you're new and you think that guy's full of shit, I don't care if you share it. If you come up and tell me I'm full of shit, I don't care. I've got mine. And I'm willing to share it with you. Or anybody else. So again, like sponsorship, home group, steps, honesty. Say it to whoever needs to hear it. I really hope I said something that made some kind of difference for somebody. I know I'm a little more relieved than I was an hour ago. I thought I was going to vomit up here. I really did. We have a wonderful process here, and it isn't difficult. We're not dumb people. We wake up in the morning with no money and no job, and by noon we're high. That takes some brains. Okay, that takes some brains. Keep it simple. Very simple. Don't worry about changing everything. Don't worry about turning over your will if you're just working on a first step. Don't jump the steps. You know? Give somebody a hug that you don't know. This speaking stuff's about the easiest thing I'm asked to do here. The hard stuff is when you go up and hug somebody that smells like they used 10 minutes ago. The hard stuff's when you buy somebody you don't know and can't stand a cup of coffee. And you've only judged them because of the way they look. The hard stuff is sponsoring a guy that annoys the living shit out of you. The speaking stuff's easy. This is the icing on the cake. And if you're new, keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.